Rifle Coffee, baby. Pretty cool.
All right, so for those of you that are listening at home that don't have video, I would highly suggest go to the Black Rifle Coffee podcast and check it out. This is the new Yeti Rambler French Press, 64 ounces, so it's big. This thing is fairly indestructible. It has a ceramic lining, locking top. It's got some really cool features. It's heavy. This isn't something you're gonna take backpacking. This isn't something like you're gonna put in your kit and think this is going to be light. This is going to be in the back of the trailer, in the back of the truck. You're going overnight, or you're hanging out at the house or the cabin. I'm not typically a big French press fan, just in general. It's dirty, meaning a lot of your French presses, one, people don't make it right. Your coffee has to be really coarse. You've got to not only bloom it, you've got to steep it for the correct amount of time. You've got to have your proper brewing ratios. This, what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to do this on a 1 to 12 brew ratio. So I've already got pre-ground 113 grams. We're going to do a quick rinse because this is brand new. Just going to rinse it out a little bit. Great features that I love about this piece of gear. Ceramic interior, what that means is because it's lined, it doesn't have the metal texture or the metal taste that a lot of your French presses will have. Glass won't translate taste either, but because this is double wall, stainless steel, vacuum sealed, it will also keep it warm for an extended period of time. It also has this gasket on the top, which is supposed to lock in the coffee on the bottom to prevent it from continuing to steep if you have coffee in the bottom, which is one of the problems with a lot of your French presses. Some of your older French presses, they've got a wire that is wrapped around the exterior of this plunger. What that does is allows the grounds to come out and around. So when I say dirty cup of coffee, that's what I mean. I mean that it translates to a dirty cup of coffee. So I've already pre-weighed this. We're gonna dump in. Oh shit, man, I am breaking everything today. Well, we're gonna start that over because I've just put glass all over in this. For those of you that are listening, I just broke yet another item today. So today I broke a Chemex, which is glass, and then a measuring cup, which is also glass. Not my intended purpose to break a bunch of shit today, but we are set to jet. So we're just gonna pour the coffee directly in. This is 113 is what we're gonna go up to. This is a bit finer in the grind than you would typically want in a very coarse, which would be, let's say the size of typically a chunk of pepper from a pepper grinder, if you're trying to eye it. But you might have to mess around with your grinder a little bit to figure it out. What you're gonna do is you're gonna put in 113 grams, and then I'll use this to infuse my water. I've got two waters here. So I'm gonna double the weight. So I'm gonna go to 240. Right off the bat, just for the bloom. We're using Gunship today. Gunship's a little bit of a lighter coffee on the Black Rifle Coffee spectrums. What we do here and what I've specifically done is everything that we do in the coffee section, specifically in grocery from our e-com channel. So if you're buying it online, if you're a subscriber, everything is built on basically light, medium, dark from the traditional sense. Your light coffees are going to be built on, there comes Moose, that's great. Your light coffees aren't going to be as light as some of your single origin micro lots that you'll get in a lot of your more bougie hipster coffee shops, unless you're part of the exclusive coffee subscription, which is we do a new coffee every month new bag design, new coffee from a different country of origin. It's typically a single origin micro lot. We focus a lot on flavor profile and trying to create something that a lot of people haven't tasted before. Now, I got a lot of questions from the DMs that guys sent in asking about what would be your preference, your coffee of choice, or your method, your brew method. If you had one brew method for the rest of your life, what would it be? I'll tell you one thing, it's not French press. This is not my favorite coffee. It's definitely not the brew method that I would stick with for the rest of my life. I like gravity, so when I say that, your pour over from a traditional sense is what we call gravity, which would be your main method of brew. A Chemex, we have multiple different types of pour overs, but what I'm referring to is a pour over coffee or gravity brew. With this, you're gonna let it bloom for at least 1 minute, then you're gonna let it steep for another 4 to 5 minutes. You're gonna stir, so I'll find something to stir with. All right, so we found a stir device. It's just a traditional plastic spoon. Now you can see if you look in there, it's got this, in espresso terms, it's got this big crema top, which is not the accurate description, by the way, if you're a coffee head, but I'm actually perfectly okay with the inaccuracy of my brewing method based on the fact that this is a French press coffee, which French press is, you can get as accurate, you can do proper brew ratios, you can do your weights and measures, you can infuse it with the correct temperature of water. However, you're still not going to have the accuracy that you would in an espresso or a gravity or a pour over. You're just not. I don't quite believe this gasket completely seals off the coffee from continuing to steep either. So for me, if I had one brew method, it'd be the pour over. We're going to try this today just to see if it works, which it should, because it's a relatively low technology that's been around a while. This is just their version of a fairly old piece of technology, meaning the French press. It's been upgraded and overbuilt in the Yeti French press Rambler with a ceramic interior. It's got a locking top, it's got a sealed bottom. It's a really cool piece of kit. I could definitely see myself using this. So for one, I would say just based on the way that it's built, I love it because it's almost indestructible, which if you've seen me in the last like 10 minutes, which is indicative to my history of trying to bring glass coffeeware anywhere, it breaks everywhere I go. So we've let it steep. And then it has a locking top, which I really like. The top won't come off. You just gotta twist it to lock. And then you're not pushing the plunger, you're letting kind of the weight move it down. And then if you've gone too fine, you realize too that as you start to push down, the coffee starts to bind and seal against the gasket, and it'll become almost impossible to push this thing down, which it has. that's fun. That's what happens when you have too fine of a coffee. We don't have these really coarse grinders out here. We just don't have one. I'd have to hand grind 113 grams of coffee, which would take me just about 5 minutes, I would imagine, to do it. But if you just lean into it, you're not pushing, you're just like applying your weight to it and it'll come through. There we go. Now it's starting to lock or free up. Once you get it all the way plunged, it's ready to drink. So a minute of bloom, 4 to 5 minutes of steep. 1 to 12 is your brew. So let's see if I can find, yeah, there we go. So we're back here in the coffee lab. We got these little black rifle coffee. Now let's take a look at the coffee and see what it looks like. So Gunship is typically a little bit darker from a dark roast profile, but it's actually one of the lighter coffees that we have. We sell it's commercially available, and it's much darker than a single origin micro lot. It's a great cup of coffee. So my assessment, the Yeti Rambler French Press is well thought out, great piece of kit, would be an incredible addition to your camping kit, but that's kind of where I would keep it. I wouldn't put it on my counter and use it every day. But it is good. So first question I got from the forum is, how do you differentiate coffee tasting notes as you're tasting coffee? The first thing you have to do is you have to get consistency in your brew method. So first and foremost, what I would do, number one, step one, is go to a pour over. It could be a Hario V60, it could be a Chemex, it could be a combination of different pour overs, but you have to have a high quality filter, high quality pour over. You've got to get an adjustable temperature kettle. You also have to get a scale, an accurate scale that'll measure gram weight. Once you get all those things and you kind of dial in your components, and I'll just tell you my rough math from a dial in your components capability is, I brew everything at 197 for my pour overs. Everything is brewed on a 1 to 16 or a 1 to 17 scale. 1 to 17 is for my lighter coffees, 1 to 16 is for my darker. I typically go 30 grams in, 480 grams yielded. I'm infusing, so as I infuse the water, I'm doing it at 100 grams per increment, typically letting it steep for a minute. So if you look at a cup of coffee, like, okay, 197 degrees, 1 to 16 ratio, good grinder, good scale, good pour over. When I say good, it doesn't have to be great. It doesn't have to be bougie or something that you're gonna spend $500 on. It just has to work. It has to have high quality filter that doesn't translate taste. It has to be maybe a glass component on the bottom. There's a lot of different variables, but get consistency, something that you can brew every day. So 197 degrees, 1 to 16. I brew everything through a Chemex, typically first before I go to a V60. And then you're also drinking in a lighter cup. So you can look at the cup of coffee here. You can see the edges, the brightness of the white will pop against the dark. And what that does, it allows you to measure not only the color of the coffee, but as you're drinking it and you drink it down, it'll continue to allow you to look at the cup of coffee and the color. So you're not just measuring taste, you're also measuring the feel, so the mouth feel of the coffee. When you hear that slurping, you're actually aspirating the coffee and you're aerating it across your entire palate from front to back. If you go over to this color wheel over here, or this flavor wheel on the back of this door, when we look at this flavor wheel, one side of this is going to be your citrus, florals, your fruits. That's going to be on the lighter scale of coffee. On the other side, you're going to get chocolate, nut, grain and cereal, roast spice. You're going to get more of your savory. So your dark and then your light. So when you look at these two, you can say this is typically going to be a lighter cup of coffee. This is going to be a darker. The reason is that you won't be able to pick up your fruit notes in a cup of coffee where it's been over roasted or way past what's called first crack. So what does that mean? If you're like a new to coffee and you don't exactly know what that means, it means brew your coffee at the same ratios, the same temperatures, aspirate or slurp your coffee first, and really try to focus on how do you pick up the different flavors. There's a lot of different places that you can go to educate yourself on the flavors in coffee. One would be the Specialty Coffee Association or the SCA. We've got a lot of information on that. I would definitely go and check those guys out. If you haven't, go and check them out. All right, two. If I could interrogate any person from history, who would it be? I don't know if interrogation would be the appropriate word, but I would say Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles was the director of the CIA after the CIA became the CIA. So it was the Office of Strategic Services at first. It was the OSS. They shut that down after World War II. They restarted it as the CIA. So he was essentially the director just up before JFK was assassinated. He and his brother was at the State Department. He was at the CIA. Kennedy had actually fired him. And then LBJ brought him back to head up the investigation for the JFK assassination. So if I had one person to sit down and do a Q&A with in history, I think Alan Dulles would probably be at the top of that list, because I would really, what I would try to do is unpack the 1950s from an intelligence perspective and then look at what and how operations were unfolding, because now it's, you know, obviously 2024. So most of this stuff would be ancient history. I would love to just dive into the meat and potatoes of the 1950s, intel, Cold War, blocking and tackling of like the spy game and covert operations. I think it would be very interesting. I think it would be an incredible guest. So it'd be Alan Dulles. Let's see, where are we at? Do I have any planned hunts? I always have planned hunts. So I typically hunt elk all of September if I can, or most of September. I'm out at least 2 weeks out of the year. So I have Utah, Colorado, and Idaho. And I'll be spending a lot of time in the field this year, specifically archery September, because that's the month, obviously. So mainly archery, mainly elk. That's about it. How angry are you? This comes from this comes from somebody. How angry are you at me for dumping 2 scoops of protein in my coffee every morning? One, I'm not angry whatsoever. It's completely up to you. If you want to ruin your coffee with protein, it's on you. I would say maybe take your first cup of coffee. What I do in the morning is I take my first cup of coffee pretty serious, meaning it's brewed at the proper ratios, time, everything about it is the same every morning, because I'm trying to replicate and or create the perfect taste. Now, my second cup of coffee is what I do. What I do is I go, and now I'm messing around with stuff. So I can add something. So MCT oils, there's a lot of different things out there, like what I'd say creamer substitutes, because we all know how I feel about creamer, but they are proteins that you can add to a coffee that either change the flavor or could change the flavor. That's when I started adding anything. So like Jack Carr, for instance, he loves to add honey. I've done that in the past, where I've added honey and cinnamon and other things into it. That's not my game. If I'm going to have a protein shake, it's a protein shake. If I'm going to have a cup of coffee, it's a cup of coffee. I don't try to combine those identities and confuse my drink gender. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to keep everything either male or female at this point. Can we get Eric Prince on the podcast? The answer is yes. I know Eric, he's a great guy. He's been out here several times. We sit down, we shoot the shit, we have great conversations. We always talk about doing a podcast, and it, for whatever reason, we're like ships in the night and it doesn't happen. But I love Eric, he's an awesome guy. He's got an incredible amount of information in his head. What's the best brew temperature for a pour over with silencer smooth? 197 to 202. Discover your own preference through that temperature window. Bring back the BRCC puppet CEO. It's more of a statement and a directive than a question. When does Idaho get a Black Rifle Coffee? Coeur d'Alene would be the perfect area. Actually, I don't disagree with that at all. Black Rifle Coffee does need to have a coffee shop in Coeur d'Alene. We have one in Kalispell, but I would love to get one in Coeur d'Alene. I spend a ton of time in Idaho during the summer. These are LaCroix. It's not a commercial for them, but I spend a ton of time in that Coeur d'Alene area basically all summer with my wife and my kids. So I work back and forth between Lewiston, the town I grew up, Coeur d'Alene, the Panhandle, and then into Montana. But I don't disagree. Coeur d'Alene would be a fantastic place for a coffee shop. But if you are looking for a great coffee shop in Coeur d'Alene where you can get an incredible cup of coffee, Evans Brothers does a pretty damn good job. How fresh is the coffee that you order from the website through the subscription? Everything that we roast and ship out should be within a 3-week roasting window. Sometimes that'll be adjusted purely based on demand. So we're trying to do the best we can in order to forecast out as far as we can. Sometimes we're a little bit off. So it could be less than that. It could be a little bit more than that, but that's typically what we like to stay in. Brent from Softly says, when are we going to work out? The answer is, well, we have a gym here, so he knows where I live. Hmm. What are my thoughts on the Mocha Master coffee machine? That I love that question because I've used a Mocha Master. If I'm going to use a drip machine of any kind, it's the Mocha Master. It's consistent, it's well built, it'll last for 30-40 years. So as far as drip machines, the Mocha Master beats them all. Like they are what I think they're top notch for a machine that you can just buy off Amazon. The filters are readily available. It's a fantastic machine. So I love it. That's what I use if I use a drip machine. It's in the camper. Like I said, I don't typically use a French press, but I will drink a Mocha Master for sure. Will I ever see BRCC coffee shops in California? The answer is maybe. I mean, maybe Northern California. I mean, it seems like those are more of my people up there. I guess Los Angeles is like 50-50, blue, red. I mean, Los Angeles maybe, I guess. I don't fucking know. What coffees do I like, whether they're from Africa or South America? Well, let's just put it like this. I like African-based origin coffees that are grown in Central and South America. So the Geisha, for instance, is an Arabica Africa origin genetic strain Geisha that is not only grown in Africa, but it's also can be grown in Costa Rica, Panama, Nicaragua. It's kind of be grown anywhere coffee's grown. My favorite is, let's call it a African Geisha that's been transplanted and grown in Panama. So that's the way that I would classify that. What was the most scared moment that I can recall while in service? Let me think. I thought I might get kicked out for getting in a fight in 2002. I got in a fist fight with another guy, and I thought I might get kicked out. So that was probably the scariest moment. Where can I get BRCC in Europe? It's a great question. To be fair, I actually don't know. There's not a lot of BRCC available in Europe. Now let's go back, see what else we got. I've already kind of answered this, but the best pour over method, best is really, it's completely relative on your preference. I use two pour overs for the most part. I use the Chemex and use the Hario V60. I would highly suggest either one of those. The V60 is great when you're on the move. So I use it hotel rooms, camping, a wide variety of other places. When I'm actually traveling, I use a Chemex every morning at my house. Mm-hmm. tips on the best advice for making, or tips and advice on making the best coffee via a drip machine maker for everyday users. Oh man, that's a good one. I like this. Tips on making the best coffee. So you can make great coffee out of a Mr. Coffee if you start with great coffee. So if you start with the correct brew ratios, good filter, great coffee, you can make a great cup of coffee. If you start with a bad cup of coffee, you use improper brew ratios, and you're putting it through a, you know, $15 drip machine, not going to turn out well for you. So what I would tell you is the best cup of coffee is going to start with great coffee. So that's where you need to start. How is BRCC truly doing? I'm not exactly sure what that means, but we're a public company, which I think I've talked a lot about this, or at least a little bit in the past, which is one of the big things that I'm trying to do constantly is inspire an entire generation of GWAT, the Global War on Terror veterans. I want them to go out and start their own small businesses. I think that they can directly plug in and have an impact, not only in the business community and their small towns, their communities where they're from, and they can also have a direct impact on the GWAT subculture in general. So, you know, for us to go public and do the things that we've done, a lot of this was built to inspire people to go out and start their own businesses, directly provide positive impact into their communities. Because as most of us know, and I think some of us have talked a little bit about this, is that our community is more susceptible, it has a higher rate of cancer, it has a much higher rate of depression and suicide. We have isolation and disconnection issues from our tribe, our community. So we need an entire generation of thousands of men and women that not only fought in the global war on terror, but then come back home and they directly plug in to create more value in not only their lives, their family lives, their community's lives. And if they decide to start a company, a company's life. So for us, how is BRCC truly doing? We do quarterly reports. We had a great quarter. We've had a couple great quarters in a row. We continue to grow. We continue to really just, I think, meet or exceed what I would say is our clearly defined goals and objectives. But one of the biggest things that we're trying to accomplish here is to inspire a group of GWAT vets to go out and make the impossible happen. So you think about what I did in 10 years, which is not me. I'm not trying to give myself a pat on the back. It's not the way I roll. But I started a company in my garage, and less than 10 years later, we were publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange. You know, we went public right across the street from where George Washington took the oath of office. I think in today's market condition, it's really, really important that people take command of their own lives. They take accountability for anything that they see in their own communities that they might disagree with or think that they've had an injustice, and they start digging in and doing something about it. What I do here is I really try hard to just look at what I'm doing, not necessarily what I'm saying, because I use a lot of profanity, and there's a lot of dudes and fucks in my language. So if I'm not the most, I'm not trying to be the most articulate. I'm not trying to be the most successful. What I am trying to do is be very specific and intentional in the way that I'm doing business and plugging in directly into my life, because I understand the GWAT community needs what I would say is a beacon for, well, shit, if this guy can do it, I can do it. And I've lost way too many friends in the last couple of years to drug addiction and suicide to just turn a blind eye and not do something that I feel is extremely important and impactful for the community. That's why we do it. So to go back and answer your question, how is BRCC doing? I get direct messages, emails and texts from people every day where they tell us, you guys have made a direct impact in my life. I started a lawn mowing business, and I was just talking to Jared yesterday, Jared Taylor. He was saying he was down in Florida at a, he was in Maryland with Travis Pastrana. And there was a guy out there that was talking to him that started a security service. And he started that because he had seen and watched what we had done at Black Rifle. He was so inspired by that. He went out and started a security company. That security company turned into something where he employs now 1,000+ people, where they do security for different concerts and different venues around not only the United States, but now internationally. So I've heard stories like that over and over and over again. And that's what really provides the fuel for me to keep going and continue to do what we do, because it's my duty back to the community. It's my passion. You know, there's two things I'm extremely passionate outside of my kids and my family, which would be the veteran community and coffee. So I get to do those two things every day. So answering your question, I think it's doing everything I set out for it to do plus some. Fermentation. So my thoughts on fermentation. One, I love fermentation. If you don't know what it is, go look it up. we're going to come out with a couple different coffees for the ECS specifically around fermentation. So I love it. There's a handful of companies I think that are doing exceedingly well out there. We've been able to do quite a few here in our sample roaster. I love the process. I love the flavors. I think this is probably the most exciting thing to happen in coffee in the last 20 years. So hopefully that solidifies how I feel about that. My top three coffee setups, I've gone through it over, but three, if I add a third, so if I have a pour over and an espresso machine, the espresso machines typically would say, if you buy something from a La Marzocco, like a La Marzocco Mini, if you buy something from, one of these is obviously, this is basically like a Ferrari of espresso machines. But you need a pour over an espresso machine, you need a decent French press, but I can get into siphons and things like that, it's just not my jam. What's the best method to brew up my new bag of Pink 79? Pour over, 1:16 ratio, 197 degrees. Any advice on starting a coffee company, the do's and don'ts? Well, number one, you have to know a lot about coffee. You have to not only know a lot about coffee, but then you also have to understand logistics, support, and operations. So I think it's a fascinating adventure that you'll love. I never discourage anybody from starting a coffee company, because if you're in coffee culture, truly in it, people look at other people's success in the coffee community and they say, those guys are doing something unique or interesting. It's a wonderful coffee, or they've done something interesting. But coffee people just love coffee, and they love to see people succeed and be happy within the coffee business. And it's a fairly tight-knit group of people that are completely passionate about what they do. So what I would say is be passionate about it, because I've said this a million times before, is that when your business is... when you feel the weight and gravity of your business, and that's just business in general, the profits and losses, you know, the wins and losses, when you don't feel like you can take another step, what will carry you through and force you into the next step is your passion for the product. It doesn't matter if I had Black Rifle or I didn't have Black Rifle, I'd still be roasting coffee. So I love coffee. More dark roast in the ECS. Probably not going to happen. Apologize. What's the biggest mistake that I've made as a CEO? A few years ago, I've made lots of mistakes, which is like, you know, a lot of those are like public debate and forum, right? I made lots of mistakes. By the way, you should never fear a mistake. Like, fear is the single most I would say, one of the biggest obstacles to an individual's success in business. Like, all stop, that's it. Fear will prevent you from accomplishing almost anything in business. So you can't fear a mistake. What you have to do is you have to do what I say is risk mitigation and course of action development. You know, I brought in a group of guys initially, you know, it's me, Matt, and Jared, and a group of other guys. And my vernacular was very team room driven. So there's a lot of what I would say is politically incorrect rhetoric that was being utilized like really early. I mean, to be fair, it still is. But if people don't understand the way that you're joking, the way that you're communicating with them, they can take your words and then flip them back, exaggerate them, and then try to sue the shit out of you. So, of course, I've made lots of mistakes. Most of my mistakes have been made with my mouth, believe it or not. I don't think that I typically have a loud mouth, but I don't have a filter. And so I think that's part of, one, you can't fear what you don't know. You can't fear your decisions. You can't be in fear of anything and everything that you say will be ultimately used against you, because you have to just drive a business. So for me, I would say place and time appropriate, the use of language, and then making sure that you understand who you're joking with and who you're not. So I just refuse to be in a politically correct prison. I'm just not going to be that guy. And if they want to do that, that's on them. It's not on me. Do I think IG is ruining hunting? No, I think, well, one, like, what is hunting? I think it's an American tradition. I think it's a means in order to feed your family. I think it's a family connector, something you can bind and pass down through generations so you can feed your family. It's a family tradition. You can use it as a hobby or recreation to connect different generations and your family. It's also a big source of funding for people that are going out to recreate. Like, you know, the people that are just going out to use trails and take pictures of birds, they're actually using the trails that hunters have typically paid for. So getting more people involved in hunting, so we continue to have what I would say is multi-generation support for hunting, which if we looked at the curve, hunting is actually dying, believe it or not, from where it was in the 1970s to where it is now. So funding for trails and conservation has continued to not only decrease from the individual perspective, while wildlife and game has continued to increase, which, by the way, when you start to reintroduce predators and apex predators, because there is enough hunters to actually mitigate the herds and the numbers, that's part of what I would say is part of the problem. I love hunting. I love the food that it provides. I love the tradition that it connects me with my kids. It connects me with my family, my father. And I love that, you know, our efforts actually go to support conservation. So those are all the things, these like really important binders that I truly believe in. Now, we can debate and or have these like what I would say is philosophical debates as to how wildlife is managed. I'm not referring to that whatsoever. I'm just saying, does hunting in IG, does it actually ruin hunting? No, I think it increases the number of hunters. Do I like the pressure that all the game are under? Not necessarily, but the tags are limited. Do I think that we have to increase our numbers? Do I think that we have to not only increase our numbers, but continue to encourage people to get out in the field and hunt, because we've got to pass this down through the generations? The answer is yes. So social media is absolutely encouraging that. Yes, I do still carry a Staccato, but I carry a SIG 365 for EDC. Any advice on somebody that wants to become an Army Ranger? I would say two things. One, you have to get it in your contract. Two, prepare yourself physically. Three, don't quit. are we going to offer, and the answer is yes, are we going to offer a Black Rifle Coffee elk hunt for a part of our subscribers? Yes. So eventually we'll get to the point where we can put this out on social, and if you're a subscriber, you have the possibility of winning an elk hunt with the Black Rifle Coffee guys. So what I would tell you guys is, if that's of interest to you, you need to go to the Black Rifle Coffee podcast and just say, hey, I want to do a hunt. I'll look at the DMs, I'll look at the number, and I'll see if there's actually some traction. But I think that would be cool. If we did like a subscriber, Matt Best, Evan Hafer elk hunt, that would be super fun. All right, let me try this again. Okay, so here's an interesting question. For someone who has lived such an adventureful life, what is a dream you have yet to fulfill? I think I lived most of my adventure in, you know, my 20s, my 30s. Then I started having kids. Now my adventures are all typically kid positioned, meaning I've got to turn my kids on to rafting, hunting, fly fishing. My main objective is to give them the tools and expertise they will need in order to go out to have a very logistically complicated adventure. And that can be difficult because, you know, I spent a huge percentage of my life just collecting skills. And that could be anything from, you know, jumping out of airplanes, reading maps, learning communications, you know, traveling in itself is just a skill. And then you go into, you know, mountain climbing, rafting, kayaking, all the outdoor activities. Now it's bow hunting and all the things I do specifically around hunting. Most of my adventure is outside. I typically only believe that adventure can be found from a non-electronic means, meaning you can't just like pull out your VR and experience things in real reality. You have to go out and experience them. I use the analogy of the river because I'm very connected to rivers, whitewater, and fly fishing. Is if you're watching somebody go down a river and they're rowing it in a kayak or a raft or drift boat or whatever it might be, that's one experience, but you're a bystander, you're an observer. It's way different for the person that's actually in the middle of the river and they're trying to navigate it and push down through the rocks, the white water. One is significantly better. I'll leave you to determine which one that might be. But for me, I think about it as like, you got to get in the river, right? So you got to get into life itself, find something that you're really passionate about, and then go just supercharged against the goal of teaching yourself the skill, qualifying yourself to go out, and now you can not only have the confidence, but you can have the competence in order to experience things at a different level. If you're terrified when you step out into the woods because of the bugs or the snakes or whatever it might be, you can never really relax and enjoy it for what it is. But if you're confident and competent in your skill set, you go out, you can have an incredible time and your experience will be elevated. So right now, my focus is not on individual adventure. It's on how do I interact and connect in my entire family into that adventure. And then making the logistics fun, meaning traveling from point A to point B could be extremely boring. But if you're doing it on motorcycles or ATVs or mountain bikes or these two feet, it can be way more interesting and adventurous. I typically think about things in, you know, how do I get there in an adventurous way, which is, I think, probably where SF plugged in more, which would be, you know, your means of infill. People start to think about, you know, your way to get to work was like, you know, parachuting or scuba diving or, you know, driving Humvees overland or whatever it might be. But that's actually just your means in order to get to work. But that at times captures the romance of being in special operations. So it's the same thing in adventure. Like, it's not the top of the mountain that matters. It's how did you get there? What's your route? So are you ice climbing? Are you hiking? Are you, you know, are you using pitons and aid climbing? But when you get to the top, the view is relatively similar from the top than it is 10 feet below. But it is the complexity of the logistics that ultimately make it more fun. That's why I focus on skills, transportation skills, because they get me to the places I want to go. The places of beauty, the places of solitude and remoteness that I truly love. And I get to drink incredible coffee pretty much everywhere I go. Mm. All right, one more and then we'll call this a day. Let's see. Is the Jura a good brand of espresso coffee? Is the Jura a good brand of espresso machine? Yes. The Jura is a auto, or I think they actually have a semi-auto espresso machine that's built for the countertop at home use. It's actually the one that I recommend for most people. So I bought it for the guys that were staying here at Black Rifle. I bought a little one, and then we started fielding them into a lot of the other partners too. So like Rogan has one down in his podcast studio. I've sent one down to Chris Williamson, a few other guys. So they're incredible espresso machines for the money and for the capabilities. They're highly recommended. My favorite ECS over the last couple of years. I think if we classify them as like, we have LTOs, which is limited time offers, and we have ECSs. My favorite ECS, I think, in the last couple of years has been Medusa's Madness. I'm actually bringing that back in November. Then LTO would be Circus Bear, which if you flip around, you can see the gold medal that we won for Circus Bear, the Golden Beans Championship. So, book recommendations. One more on book recommendations. Book recommendations in general. I'll recommend an author because she's written several books on Rome, Roman emperors, and the Roman Empire. Mary Beard, I believe. You can correct me in the comments. And I'll pull up. I'll pull her up real fast so we can actually, I can reference her directly. So Mary Beard, which would be SPQR, is the name of one of her books that I really love. And what I'll do is if I find something I really like, I'll listen to it and then I'll pick it up and or I'll flip it. So I'll read it and then I'll go back and listen to it because it has so much information. The Roman Empire, one, it's fascinating. Two, I think is not only fascinating, there's quite a few lessons learned, and you can see how it directly impacts our culture today. So something from 2,000 years ago and how it's actually affecting our being in the present circumstance that we're in right now. The myth of Sisyphus, I've talked about this before, by Albert Camus. I think if you're into philosophy, which I am, and you're a vet or you're non-vet, it's relatively not significant to this, but Albert Camus wrote this book about the myth of Sisyphus. I'm not going to ruin it for everybody, but I highly recommend reading it. And I would highly recommend Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. So more philosophy, I think it actually helps not only in your day-to-day life, but it also helps you project out 10, 20, 30 years, get yourself goal-oriented, get your mind right, stay focused on the things that matter. Thank you so much. I can't wait for the next one.